The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM,
another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I don't know about you, but I can't wait for the combine next week in the NFL. I can't wait. I don't know what it is about the combine that I like. If you would ask me, like, let's say an alien from outer space came down and he said, "What are you doing today? Tell me about your culture." And I said, "Well, I'm going to watch television. Those guys in shorts just run and then lift weights and then run some of those zigzag things. And then I'm just going to sit back and just absorb all that." The alien would probably leave going, "No intelligent life down here. My God, what
that,
is he doing?"
Or the alien would say, "Easy planet to take over."
Maybe so, right? We can just take this one down, no problem. They don't even know why they're watching this stuff. We can just convince them that this is worthy, and we can just take over while we sleep. Because it doesn't make any sense. No. Why do I like the combine? Why is it an attractive event on television?
You know what it is? It's like the NFL players or college, you know, future NFL players went to the Olympics.
That's probably it.
That's what it is. Even though there's not a competition, if this guy runs faster than that one, that guy doesn't win.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Except maybe his draft stock gets better, but
and here's the deal, dude. I'm not even making what do you call it? I'm not even glossing myself as a draft analyst. I don't do that. I have my opinions on the draft. I have my opinion on players, but I'm not the guy. I don't amateur chart this stuff. I don't have my own mock 2.7 draft. I don't do that. So what am I doing it for? Right. I mean, what do I watch it for? There are guys who do it and do it really, really well. Lance Zierlein, who's going to join us at 40 past the hour, is really good at it. So we're going to talk to him about the draft. So I just watch it for some entertainment value, I guess. But you know what it is? I think I watch it because the NFL is such an attractive product in almost everything they do that they've packaged this up as a really good show. Years ago, I got caught into it, and I kind of have it thrown on in my afternoon work. I have to admit, it's a weird obsession, but it's one a lot of us have. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. So the Combine starts next week, and then the draft will be in April. Right here in Nashville, Tennessee. You ready, Ron, for the draft? Coming to the Music City?
I am. I'm curious.
It'll be fun.
Who's going to go number one?
Nashville knows how to party. Vince Gill, followed by Carrie Underwood.
One.
And then Luke Bryan is going to go third. And then, let's see, Hunter Hayes will go fifth. And then Jason Aldean, who's recently sold his house, will go to the 10th pick.
Okay, but who went four? You skipped four.
Oh, that's true. I skipped four. Yeah, because right, not sure. That's still open. That's still up in the air. Maybe one of the older,
I don't know, country music artists. You know, I might go against you a little bit. I might say Carrie, you know, would be a sneaky one right there.
Sneaky one, yeah.
Yeah, she might vault over Vince Gill.
Apparently, she's looking really good after her. She had a facial accident or something, and then had a baby. So
yep,
whatever you do, there you go. Nashville knows how to party. Yeah, no, I don't know what it is. Yeah, no, right. Nashville knows how to party. They know how to throw a good show. We'll see if they can pull this off because I'm going to be honest here. And I live in Nashville. It's my city. I love it. I just love being from Nashville, but it's a big, but, Philadelphia put on a great show when they had it. Philadelphia mm-hmm. fans came out in force. They really did a great job. Chicago did a good job when they had it. Dallas did a good job when it had it. So the draft, it's a big scale.
No, and it's a big deal because it's going to a city that isn't really known for NFL.
NFL football, right. The passion for the NFL football. Like, one of the joys of watching when it was at Radio City Music Hall was when the Jets would pick.
Yes.
Because the New York fans would be there, they would have a presence there, and they were very passionate about their team. And so when the Jets would pick, they'd go crazy. You could find YouTube compilations of all sorts of Jet picks and their reactions to those picks, right? And it's fun, and it's really awesome. Philadelphia was the same way. Do you remember when, what was his name? Drew Pearson, or was it?
Yeah.
Of the Cowboys came out and said, five-time Super Bowl champion, Dallas Cowboys. And that was before the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
Right.
That was the year before they won the Super Bowl.
And that's when we had last year's.
That was right. They had that when Eagles went to Dallas and did that same thing. Because these are very, very, very passionate cities that take the NFL and they live and die with this. So when he came out and did that five-time Super Bowl, he knew what he was getting. He embraced it. The rivalry was real. He enjoyed it. The fans booed him. They were part of it. That was interesting.
David Akers came out last year.
Right.
I think it was him when he came out and said that none of these draft picks were born. They were pretty much all born after the last time the Cowboys won a Super Bowl.
Exactly. That is the taste of having this on a local level. That's the taste that you can get taking
these to city.
Nothing. That's the problem. Nothing. There's nothing the Titans have.
Are they going to boo the Texans or the Jaguars?
Yeah,
or the Colts?
See, right? Right? Like, what is when Tennessee makes its pick and they get up there and go, "We're better than Jacksonville! Yay!"
Just barely.
Clap.
Or maybe they go, "We own the Bills!"
I asked my cousin, who's a season ticket holder. He's been a season ticket holder pretty much since day one. I go, "Who's the rival?" He goes, "I guess Jacksonville." I go, "What do you mean you guess Jacksonville? If you say I guess, there is no rival.
Not a rival.
If you say I guess before when I ask you who your rival is, you don't have one." Right? You don't have one. And the problem is when I ask other people, they'll say, "Well, I hate Houston." Well, okay, great. "I hate Indianapolis." Okay, there's a problem. You two disagree. All right? Take this to another city, and they'll either say all of them or give you a specific team.
Yeah,
No one in Boston, for example, when you say Red Sox fan, "Hey, who's your rival?" No one says Baltimore. Like, no one says Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I think the only main difference I would say would probably be the NFC East.
Probably the NFC East.
Because if you go to Eagle fans, say, "Who's your rival?" Most of them will say Cowboys. A lot of them will say Giants. And you'll have
the answer should be all of them. The answer should be every one of them.
I mean, that division just hates each other.
Yeah.
And
so
we're fine with that.
I think the music is going to be great. I think the city knows how to party. The city is really good at that. I mean, really good. The Predators, for a hockey team in the South, they do a great job on Broadway outside of Bridgestone Arena when the Preds are in the playoffs. It is a place to be. You don't even have to have tickets to the game. You go downtown, they really can put on a show. They really know how to do it. And the CMAs, oh my God, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. This is going to be fun. I think this is going to be interesting. You just won't have, if you feel like they're missing the local NFL flavor. Like, you're going to get country music. You're going to get the country music stars. You're going to get the taste of Music City come April. But if you're looking for a team to come out and rip the Titans, or a team to come out, the Titans to come out and rip a team, there's nothing there yet.
I can make one guarantee about the draft.
Okay.
That there will be boos, because everyone universally, doesn't matter which NFL city you're in, everyone universally boos Roger Goodell.
Yeah, that's true. They'll boo Roger Goodell.
Know why or not, they're going to boo.
That is very true. That is very true. So the combine next week is a step into that world. I'm still am curious about Kyler Murray. Does he throw in the draft? I mean, in the combine or not? Would you, if you were Kyler Murray? I advised him too. He's not taking my advice, obviously, but I advised him too. No,
don't sell yourself short. You know, you don't know.
I don't know.
Be listening right now, we'll saying, see. "God, you know, Tony really feels I should."
Tony really thinks I should throw.
Maybe
throw, Kyler. Throw.
Throw.
Throw, throw in the combine.
Because, I mean, it just benefits him. He can prove to the NFL brass that, you know what, yes, he belongs in the NFL. Maybe it improves his draft stock. Or if he comes out there and he's terrible, you know what, maybe this was a bad idea. A's, you know, what you up to?
My thought process was, if you are making this statement that you're all in on football, don't. Just go through the motions of the combine. Do everything at the combine so you're showing that. Because, listen, there are going to be teams that are not going to like you for some reason, unless you universally wow. I'm sure there are teams that don't like his size, and I don't mean height. I mean thick. Like, is he bulky enough to handle the? Like, he looks like if an NFL linebacker got a hold of him, he'd crack in half. I mean, he looks that small. But that doesn't mean he can't be successful. He can certainly be successful. But there are going to be teams that are going to be like, I don't know, I'm not sure. You don't want any of the teams that could be on your side swayed in a way that makes them think that you're not as committed to football and that you have the A's in your back pocket, like you have baseball in your back pocket. Go to the combine and show everybody you're committed to football. Show everybody you're into the whole process, that you're into everything. So throw. I'm sure there's advisors telling you not to. I'm sure there's people telling you horror stories that if you fail, it's going to cost you this. Just go to your pro day and where you're more comfortable. I get it. But also remember, there are teams that are going to look at you that could draft you, may draft you, but are curious about your commitment to football. Show them that those fears are not valid. Show them that you will throw and you will put up the kind of performance, or you'll put up the kind of workout that these teams are looking for. Because you're unique. No one else is going into the combine with an opportunity to do something else. There's nobody going into the combine like, well, you got to offer me a deal, either this or I'm running a chain of pharmacies. Like, or I got my bioengineering degree and I'm going to go do that. Or everybody wants to play NFL football and you have an opportunity to go to baseball. All right, 800-777-2907. Tragedy happened with Syracuse head coach Jim Boeheim. We'll talk about that coming up next. Also, Good and the Bad and the Dumb coming up as well. It is SB Nation AM.
This is Mike Herzing for Let's Talk Wheels with an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. Listeners email me every week asking which fuel to use, regular or premium. The answer is in your owner's manual. You remember, it's a small book in the glove box that most people never look at until there's a problem. If it says premium recommended, then that means the higher octane helps performance a little. That's it. If it says premium required, then your engine is really designed for it and you need to use it. Luckily, only a few high performance and luxury cars need it, not many. Folks, running premium fuel is not giving your car a treat. But what I would do is spend a few cents more per gallon and buy a top-tier fuel. Top Gear Fuel has more than the minimum additives and cleaners that your engine really needs. All the major brands are top-tier fuels. Simple rule of thumb, folks. Buy your groceries at the grocery store and get your fuel at a major brand station. This is Mike Herzing with Let's Talk Wheels, brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more of my tips, go to letstalkwheels.com, and you can find us on Facebook as Let's Talk Wheels.
To celebrate the Jeep President's Day event, we're creating our own motorcade of the most awarded, best-selling SUV brand ever to hit the road and explore what lies beyond it. Leading the procession is Jeep Wrangler, American legend, and the 2019 Motor Trend SUV of the Year. Following close is Jeep Grand Cherokee, the most awarded SUV ever, and versatile Jeep Compass with its class-leading technology and connectivity. And rounding it all out is Jeep Cherokee with its nimble 31 mpg highway. But great deals on this motorcade will be coming to an end soon. So hurry in today to the Jeep President's Day event. The Jeep brand and Jeep Grand Cherokee have received more awards over their lifetime than any other SUV or SUV brand. Based on compact SUV segmentation, OEM website, Auto Knowledge, EPA estimated 4-cylinder, 4x2. Actual mileage may vary. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, bad, and the dumb here on a Friday. Oh, this could be fun. But then again, I don't know what Ron Culver has up his sleeves for this fine segment. But we start with the good because we get to the other stuff later.
Yeah.
What is the good for this Friday?
The good for this Friday is Tiger Woods. I don't know if you saw this, but I do have the audio of it. His introduction, he's playing down at the WGC Mexico Championship, obviously.
Yes,
down
he
in
is.
Mexico.
Yep.
I don't think he's doing too bad. I mean,
he shot a 71, yeah, but Rory McIlroy shot a 63 to open up the tournament.
And to be honest with you, it might have been the introduction that set him off.
Okay.
Here we go.
Señoras y señores, ladies and gentlemen, bienvenidos. Welcome to the WGC Mexico Championship 2019. Directamente desde los Estados Unidos, recibamos, como solo México sabe hacerlo, a una leyenda de este juego. 14 veces ganador de Majors, 4 veces campeón del Masters de Augusta, 3 veces ganador del US Open y del Abierto Británico, 4 veces campeón del PGA Championship. Sí, de los Estados Unidos y por primera vez compitiendo en México. Eres Tiger, Tiger, Tiger Woods.
How awesome is this?
That is really good. I don't love
you,
that.
I mean, don't you think now that they all need to be introduced that way?
I think that was great. That was fantastic. I love that guy. He nailed it. He nailed it. I mean, I don't speak Spanish, but I could tell he was bringing up his major championships.
I mean, you heard the PGA Championship.
That is great. That is great. You know, there's a very famous clip of the tour championship years ago where the announcer was doing the same thing and he was listing all of Tiger Woods' accomplishments on the first tee. And he was paired with Mickelson, and Mickelson interrupts him and goes, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, we get it." And then everybody had a big laugh. That was great. I love that. That's really good. Tiger did double bogey the first hole.
Yeah,
I saw
so
that.
I think the nerves got to him a little bit.
Yeah, he's probably like, "Whoa, I better put on a show now."
Yeah,
I mean, my
I
God.
Wasn't expecting that.
I was going to hit a 5-iron off the tee to the middle of the fairway, leaving me a 7-iron into the green. But now I got to bring out the big dog on that one. I got to drive this green. Are you kidding? I'm going to take my back to +7 on the Richter scale.
I got a Happy Gilmore this hole.
Exactly. These people are expecting Tiger Woods. I can't give him Eldrick. I can't give him Eldrick the Aged. Yep. I have to give him Tiger.
Eldrick the Aged. That sounds like an elf. That's so awesome. God, that's fantastic.
I got to give him Tiger. Way to go. All right, so the good. Now let's go to the bad.
The bad. There's some scary stuff going on over in Asia right now, and I'm going to pick on two countries. First will be Japan. I sent you a video. Don't watch it yet.
Okay.
Okay, Japan. In all its brilliance, I don't know if this is such a smart idea. They landed a spacecraft on an asteroid. Right? Not too bad.
They did. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And then they shot a bullet at it.
Wait a minute. What do you mean shot a bullet?
They shot The
like they got out of the spacecraft.
No, no, no.
Shot a there's nobody on the spacecraft.
No, nobody on it. It's an unmanned. The spacecraft shot a bullet so they can collect some of the dust of the asteroid.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But haven't we seen too many movies? Wouldn't this just make the asteroid mad?
Yeah, and it's going to come right back to Earth.
Why are we shooting asteroids?
Don't mess with it, man. Don't mess with it.
And I seem to remember that to destroy an asteroid. I mean, if you have a firecracker blow up in the palm of your hand, it just burns.
Yeah, that's right.
So I mean, a bullet's not going to do anything.
And you also got to dig deep to put a nuclear bomb
in it.
Exactly. So you can blow it up.
I don't know if Bruce is ready to die yet. He still has a good couple movies in him.
I will get to 800 feet.
So I mean, I'm just a little worried now that we, you know, I mean, the asteroid is not in danger. I guess it's like floating around the asteroid belt or something. I don't know where it actually is, but it's not in danger of crashing into us. But it might be now. I mean, you shoot a bullet at it, you don't know what that asteroid's going to do.
Speaking of Armageddon, is there no more cheesy line than when he sees Ben Affleck and he goes, "I got five words for you. Great to see you, boy." Is that that's really a terribly written line.
That is
for that moment in the movie.
That is, yeah. Like, I'm trying to. I think there's a couple other ones in that movie.
Yeah,
but you know
my,
what? You
my
know,
favorite line in the movie that was when Steve Buscemi goes, "We're not even supposed to be here, man." And I thought, I feel the exact same way sitting in this seat. I was like, I'll wait for
or
DVD.
When he's duct taped to the chair, it's like, what? We stay and we go. Right. I had a great spot picked out there.
That's right. Steve Buscemi's character was the best.
It was.
Yeah, don't mess with asteroids, man.
That
That's not
and,
good.
God, I can't remember his name. The big guy.
Michael Clark Duncan?
Michael Clark Duncan, when he's being interviewed by the psychologist. That's one of my favorite things.
Oh, when he starts crying?
Yeah. He's like, I'm a little emotional right now. And it's like gigantic beast of a man. Just bawling as a
God.
All right, but the other bad.
Yes.
So we don't get too sidetracked because we can talk Armageddon all day long. The other bad, and this is the video I wanted you to watch.
It's I've got the video called up. I haven't seen it yet.
It's a Chinese factory worker, and yes, you will see this Chinese factory perish. But it scares me to the fact of how.
Okay, I've got the what is he doing?
I don't know what
is it a pharmaceutical company?
It's a pharmaceutical company, and this scares me that this is something in a pharmaceutical company.
Okay, so he's working on a piece of machinery, and I'm going to push play. So he's working on a piece of machinery. There's another worker next to him talking. The guy's fudding around with something. He's twisting some knobs or something. He's kind of bent down. Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, no, I got to watch that again real quick. Okay, wait a minute. He's turning some knobs and then a flash of light and he like a rocket ship. Oh, my God, he got blown up.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone.
He got launched. I mean, because if you see, you also see that he was wearing a hard hat. Man, safety first.
Oh, and there's parts that fall out. There's like pieces. I mean, fall in the background.
I don't know
if those are, that's him, but
two things come to mind. Shouldn't there be a sticker that says, you know, danger?
Yeah, don't stand in front of this
valve. In front of this valve. I mean, you know, something bad could happen. Or why is something like that at a pharmaceutical company?
I thought
they just use like Bunsen burners and beakers and things like that to make drugs.
Oh my God, that is so scary.
I mean,
that guy's just
evaporated.
And then he's gone. Yep. Now, that had to have been instantaneous, right?
I'm sure.
He probably didn't even know what hit him because.
Yep. That has to. Wow. I mean, that just like.
This was from
your whole body.
This was from May of last year. So
China finally releasing the video.
My God. That is scary. You should be able to find that if you're into that morbid kind of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is the bad. What is the dumb today?
This and you know what we talked about this off air. We never talked about it on air, and I feel that we need to bring this up, especially since we're doing a lot of draft talk and we talking a lot of college sports. But earlier this week, and I think I might even say it was last weekend, there is a student. There was a pickup basketball game at Clemson University.
Yes,
and a student, not a student athlete, just a student. Decided to set a screen on guess who?
Trevor Lawrence, my boy.
Yeah. I mean,
the laboratory.
Does this guy not know who that is to the university?
No, you don't. You don't mess. The idea that there is a student at the University of Clemson that messed around with Trevor Lawrence in a basketball game, he better be very careful. That is expulsion if you mess around with the Golden Boy quarterback.
I don't even think it's expulsion from the university. It might be just from the state altogether.
Might be from the state. He might find solace in Columbia. Like he could boogie to Columbia and they'd probably house him for a while for being the guy that took out Trevor Lawrence.
Like in
a
safe house?
Yeah, like
witness protection program.
The perimeter around Columbia, South Carolina and Gamecock country. He could survive in that little bubble. But the upstate, forget it. He's out. He would be out.
I mean, of all people, you can probably do it to the starting wide receiver or running back or even a defensive lineman that all these guys have pro aspirations, but not that guy.
Yeah.
That guy is going to be the face of the university for the next two seasons.
Exactly. That's right. And I think you have to go a little like Marcellus Wallace from Pulp Fiction on him. Like, you just need to take that kid and go, you be gone, you stay gone, you lose your Clemson privileges. That's your punishment. That guy's like, all right, I'm leaving. Goodbye.
Yep. I'm off to Florida.
And grabs his girlfriend and gets on a chopper and gets the hell out of there.
Go, he'll do great in Tuscaloosa.
Exactly. Get the hell out of there. You cannot survive the upstate of South Carolina. You mess with Trevor Lawrence. Are you kidding me? I mean, my God. People are protecting that guy with a plastic bubble. Are you kidding?
Yeah, you think put him in a case. Backlash from Dabo saying, "Hey, you know what? Maybe cool it on the pickup basketball game."
What they're worried about is they're worried about if the kid hits Trevor Lawrence in a certain way, Lawrence falls down, and we see the robotic arm, and we all go, "Oh, that's what's happening! Oh my God, that's why Clemson's got the bionic quarterback, and that's why they're trying to keep that a secret." That's what's going on.
Exactly.
But you can't mess with Trevor Lawrence, man. You got to be careful.
All of a sudden, computer glitch starts happening.
If he comes to your court and he says, anybody got game? You want to play game? You go, no, I'm busy. I got other
horse.
Thank you, Trevor. I got horse,
we'll
but
play
that's
horse.
It. No, I can't. I got to go. I got that thing. We got that thing we got to do. And you just leave him be because you don't want to mess with Trevor Lawrence at Clemson.
To SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, working on Lance Zierlein from ESPN 97.5 in Houston and NFL Network to talk draft, the combine next week. A lot of conversation about Kyler Murray, where he's going to go. Should he throw? Should he not throw? I'm looking at this draft class, and I'd like to know the level of where we're at with this draft class. We bring in Lance Zierlein now. Again, ESPN 97.5 and also NFL Network. That was breakdown what we could be seeing at the Combine in the draft in April. How are you, Lance?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. All right. Tell me give me an idea of where you've got this draft class as a whole. Is this one of the better players that are coming into the draft, at least in the first round, that we've seen in years past? How does it grade overall?
Well, it's a deep class. I think from the middle of the first into the third, it's not very good high end though. It's one of the lower ones I've had in terms of having a top talent. I know the fans may think there's, you know, this monster talent on the board. Maybe they think it's Quinnen Williams. Maybe they think it's Nick Bosa. That's not the way NFL teams see it, and it's not the way I graded it for sure. So I think we've had bigger. This has probably got the lowest, 1-2-3 type talent since we saw the Leonard Williams, Kevin White draft in 2015. But it does have, drafts aren't really judged on who your top five are. It's really more judged on how your top three rounds look, and it's actually fairly deep in the top three rounds. And in certain positions, it's really good.
Is quarterback a position that's really good? With the addition of Kyler Murray in the mix, how do you grade the quarterback class, at least from a first or second round perspective?
Average. I mean, your top two quarterbacks are guys who have started for 1 year, and that's it. So you've got guys who have less than 15 games of experience, starting experience in Kyler Murray and Haskins. Those are your two best quarterbacks. I don't believe Daniel Jones or Drew Locke is. I think Drew Locke is the third best. I think Daniel Jones is the fourth best. But for me, if you look at last year's class, I thought last year's class had better upside. And now we've had some not great quarterback classes. I liked both Wentz and I liked Goff. But beyond that, I thought it was just kind of average. Obviously, it ended up being a much better draft with Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. And Mitchell Trubisky as three first-round quarterbacks a few years ago. This draft, to me, is not in that category. So, and I don't have a grade for Wentz, for Haskins, or Murray. So, it's interesting. I think it's when your top guys have 1 year of sample size, that's a little bit scary. The rest of the quarterbacks, to me, Drew Lock looks the part. I just don't know that he is ready to step into a starting NFL role for the first year or two. And then Daniel Jones, we'll see. I'm not as high on him as others are. And then beyond that, I mean, to me, it falls way off after there.
A team like the Denver Broncos, a couple of weeks ago, they were in the market for a quarterback thinking that Case Keenum wasn't the answer. There was a lot of conversation that Elway was in love with Drew Lock. Given that they traded for Joe Flacco, can I make the assessment that he doesn't think Lock is the guy enough to be a 10th round pick that can take his franchise over and be a franchise quarterback? Or do the Broncos need so many other positions filled, better to trade for a veteran and fill the positions in the draft?
My guess is this is just about putting themselves in position to, you know, even if you drafted whoever you thought was the number one quarterback, you'd still, realistically, they would not be ready to perform at a high level as a rookie, more than likely. So I think what it does, it allows you to have a guy who can, I guess in Elway's mind, potentially help you win now and compete now. But at the same time, it's clear Flacco, with his contract and where he is in his career, he's still a bridge quarterback to some extent, in all likelihood. Now, there's a chance he's not. Quarterbacks have longer shelf lives. But I think he's still going to be a bridge quarterback. So I think it allows you to approach your first-round pick completely wide open. I think quarterback is still on the board. I think every position is now on the board. You've just solved next year's, you know, quarterback. Who is going to be quarterback next year? I think you solved that with this addition. I don't know that changes their philosophy in the offseason of how to approach that position in the future. I think that's still open.
Lance Erline joining us here on SB Nation Radio, ESPN Houston, also NFL Network. Kyler Murray, there's a conversation about whether or not he will throw next week at the Combine. Should he throw at the Combine?
I struggle with that one because obviously for selfish purposes, I want him to throw, and I like apples-to-apples comparisons against other quarterbacks. From the standpoint of the player, and the information, you know, what the player gets. If you're an accurate quarterback and you look good throwing the football, I think it's good to throw at the combine. There's going to be a lot made out of, well, you don't have your own receivers. Let me tell you something. I don't think it's blown out of proportion at the Senior Bowl. I do think it's blown out of proportion at the combine, because at the combine, you are getting a chance to compete against other quarterbacks with the same receivers, and it's a rare opportunity for you to have literally back-to-back-to-back throws against other quarterbacks where you can show off your merits as a passer and really have a chance to stand out. So I would say, you know, I think it would behoove Kyler Murray, who I think his accuracy is average, but his arm talent is good. I would go out there and fling it with those big guys. Now, what you're in – Drew Lock's got a big arm. Haskins has a big arm. They have big days, and you are it's like buckshot all over the place. Then you do some damage to yourself potentially. But if you do well on the flip side, then I think you have a chance to cement yourself as the first quarterback off the board. I really do. And that's crazy to think that for a guy who may check in just under 5'10". But a strong performance in a quote-unquote competitive performance against other quarterbacks, I think, would do that.
Lance, I always want to, because you put out some mock drafts, and I always like guys who kind of go out and say, here's the way I think. When you do yours, do you do it the way you see the talent and you see the need, or do you go, I know Arizona, I know their management, I know they got a new head coach, they're sneaky like this, and this is where I think they'll go with the draft?
Yeah, I never do anything. Mock drafts are never meant to be they're meant to be my predictions. They're never meant to be my opinions. frankly, I don't know a lot of people that at the higher levels of media do that with the idea of this is who I think should go anywhere. You're trying to guess what will happen. It's more of a predictive tool and exercise. So, yeah, I always try to come up with who I – you know, I keep my own opinions based on players sometimes will leak into where I might stack the players when they come off the board, but not always. I've got Nick Bosa ahead of Rashawn Gary, but I put Rashawn Gary ahead of Nick Bosa in the last mock draft, much to the dismay of the entire internet. But, I was just trying to predict what the 49ers might do based on their needs and based on what my expectations for Rashawn Gary's workout's going to be, which is he's going to be in the 270s, and he's going to run about a 4.49 to 4.52. That's going to have everyone buzzing, and he's going to be the hot name to come out of Indianapolis. So I use that knowledge that I have there to project in the mock draft. Would I take him 2, 3, even 4? No, I probably wouldn't.
That being said, the Raiders at 4, when you look at John Gruden and what the Raiders have been doing and some of the moves that they've made that had us go, oh, all right, whatever, what do you see them doing it for?
That's really tough to tell because they have so many picks. I mean, there's so many picks and there's so many ways to – I think they're just best on the board. I really do. I think when it comes to the Raiders, you've got to approach this like we've got a ton of holes. Obviously, the defensive line is one of the huge holes that they have. I just approach it best on the board. And based on, you know, what the board looks like and where they are taking and what the rest of their draft looks like from a draft pick standpoint – you know, for me, I just go with best on the board. I don't try to get tricky, and that's probably going to be defensive line or you know, some type of rush to add to the mix.
When you have a team like the Raiders that have 3 first round picks, what's the likelihood that they'll take all 3 first round picks? Do you think they package one of them to get a lot more picks later?
Oh, I think there's definitely that possibility. You know, they're a little cash strapped right now anyway. If you can keep pushing it off until future picks when you're in Las Vegas, yeah, I think that's absolutely possible. If you can move a first rounder this year for a second rounder this year and a first rounder next year, yeah, I think there's a decent chance you end up doing something like that.
Just playing around with some of the things in the top 10, is there any absolutes in terms of, not player, but just like the Giants taking a quarterback, for example, or one other team taking a linebacker, for example? Is there any sort of... There is no doubt that's the idea they have with the 7th, 8th, 5th, whatever pick.
Well, we know the Giants aren't that way. They don't operate that way. So I don't, you know, they're going to stay true to their board. That's a tough question. I would say Jets defensive line. I think best available D-line, Jets, front 7. I think that feels pretty well locked in. I mean, you got to remember, if you see a quarter, they're not taking a quarterback. There are no wide receivers you would take that high. Frankly, there's no offensive lineman you would take that high. You're running out of options here. It's going to be a defensive lineman for the Jets. It's just a matter of is it going to be interior or outside. But defensive line, I think the Jets are pretty well locked into that position in the draft. And I know that's an early one. And I think the Texans also, they are absolutely desperate for cornerback help and for tackle help. So I think however they approach free agency to address one of those needs, even if it's temporary, could go a long way in projecting the other need being filled in the first round.
How much does a combine help in terms of if you've got an idea of a player, what do you look for at the combine? I think of a guy like Devin White, for example, out of LSU. If he's fast, if he really runs a 40 fast, and again, I get it, straight line, but does that move him up like a significant number of spots?
No, because he's fast. You always said that. So right. I don't care what he runs.
So it doesn't matter what he runs. So if he runs like a 4.4, you go, oh my God, that's for a linebacker, that's incredible. And that wouldn't.
I don't think Devin White is. You know, he might work out. He might have some explosive, you know, the 3-cone stuff, some of the short shuttle, change of direction might matter more. Explosive vertical leap, how he looks in drills on the field. I think a lot of Devin's will be behind the scenes. I think wherever you have Devin White, it's going to stay the same. There will be other guys like wide receivers who could really help or hurt themselves. Like N'Keal Harry is one guy, wide receiver from Arizona State. If he ends up running in the low 4.5s, he's going to really help himself. A lot of teams believe he's going to run in the 4.6 range. If he runs in the low 4.5 range, 4.51, he's going to shoot himself up because we know he's a good wide receiver, but the question is, can he run? So those are typically the guys who can help themselves are going to be the skill position guys, the cornerbacks, the wide receivers. And then, of course, I think when you have something like Rashawn Gary, a 270-pound guy whose tape, frankly, wasn't great. It's not very skilled. It's just explosive, but it's not skilled. If he comes out and blows the door off the combine like Clowney has done, like, you know, J.J. Watt has done in the past, like a lot of these big men do, big men who test like linebackers tend to move up the draft. When I say big, I'm talking 270 and up. They tend to move themselves up the draft. So those are the ones. I think the skill position, the corners, wide receivers, they can help or hurt themselves with something as basic as the 40, because that is considered, you know, an absolute must. You need to be able to run. And then the big defensive linemen can really help themselves. And but other than that, you know, I think a lot of it is going to be how you look in the drills and how you interview behind the scenes. And some of it will be, you know, bench press stuff, some strength stuff for offensive and defensive linemen. That matters too.
Lance, good stuff. Really appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you. You
got it. Lance Erline, ESPN Houston, and also NFL Network on the draft. Interesting thought analysis. It's always hard to do the mock drafts. That's why I asked the question. Do you go with what you think the number one, two, three pick should be, or do you have to really know the mindset of the Arizona Cardinals front office? And some, I could tell some mock drafts are like, no, this is the best player and they should take this guy. And then there's some other, they're like, no. This is how they think. This is how they evaluate. This is what I know about the general managers and the coaches behind the scenes. And those are the mock drafts I think are really, really more valuable. 800-777-2907. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. Do you think it's a coincidence that the day after Zion Williamson blows out a shoe and busts his knee and is day-to-day, and we're now having a national conversation on college athletics, that is reported that the NBA officially proposes a change to draft eligible age to 18 starting in 2020 if it gets approved by the Players Association? Maybe coincidence. I don't know. There's been a conversation about this for a while. Adam Silver has been talking about it. He wants to try to get rid of the one-and-done rule. The one-and-done thing had really good intentions because it was a level of maturity, right? It was this idea that, you know, hey, there's, because it's not about money. Don't get me wrong. It's not about an 18-year-old kid handling money, right? Oh, he doesn't put it away in mutual funds. It's about the intense scrutinized pressure of these 18-year-old kids going to these professional teams where it is a business and there is no more coddling and you better produce. And the ramifications of you not producing are gigantic. And can you handle all of that coming, all of that negativity that's coming your way for the first time in your life? If you're the number one pick in the NBA draft at 18 years old, you have never felt an obstacle. You have never felt negativity. You've had people coddle you to try to get a piece of you, to try to make sure you're taken care of. And David Stern saw a player like Kwame Brown be the number one pick and be a disaster. And how do you handle that? Do you just say, I don't care, he's 18? Or do you feel like there's a level of responsibility where you go, as a league, we don't want to burn these kids out. We don't want these kids to feel the scorn of fans. We can protect them a little bit. And I think that's what the one-and-done rule did.